So I'd like to just mention, before further ado, lying practice. And I'm not suggesting you do it now. Please don't do it now. But I think, I meet a lot of people, first of all, who seem to suffer from various forms of sleep difficulties, insomnia, and so on. Also, those of us who are getting a bit older, keeping the old body upright is going to get harder and harder. And lying practice is one of the four classic postures, sitting, lying, walking, and... Thank you. So what I discovered with my mother is that I sometimes would be very, very tired, but I'd be revved up on a kind of, you know, when you're doing caregiving 24/7 and you're sort of in the room next to her wall. She was just in the next room. I could hear everything, and I got this kind of energy, like almost I was on coffee, but I wasn't taking coffee. It's just sort of very, very alert and aware and ready for anything, especially as she got more liable to fall or she had more need. And so I didn't want to really sit up somehow. I was quite tired, but oftentimes it would be hard to fall asleep. And so I just tried to develop lying meditation practice. And so I've been trying to develop that for a few years now, and I hadn't really consistently developed it. I could sleep well, but I think I had the insight that wasn't quite meditation necessary and important. So I began to just sort of experiment. I came across a few teachings on Nidra Yoga. I think Nidra is sleep and yoga is awake. It's a kind of interesting combination, isn't it, Nidra Yoga, and just talking with others. But so I tried to develop like that as a form of practice, and that's proven to be very, very useful more and more. So the main thing I found was, the first of all, that I had to set up my mind that this was now a time of form of practice to make that intention. Doesn't sound like much, but if you just think about sitting practice as you do it, if you've got a place where you sit and you've got like a bench or you've got a shrine and you make the time, and maybe even you set your clock, there's a lot of intentions, there's a lot of geography there, there's a lot of symbolism, all kinds of things which remind you of meditation practice. And then all that informs your attitudes and the way you make effort and how you do it. Whereas if you lie on a bed in your bedroom and you think, well, maybe I'll do some meditation, maybe I won't, all the perceptions of the bed might be to annihilate consciousness, in other words, to go to sleep. And so the mind kind of preparing itself to do something is not there. So I saw that that's what I need to do. It seems very, very obvious, but I needed to do that in my mind to prepare myself for meditation, even if I like woke up in the middle of the night. Now if I woke up at 2 a.m. or something like that, I didn't really want to sit up. I mean, I had the ideal, oh, this is a great time to practice. That was the idea, but the reality is, man, I just don't want to get up. I just want to keep the body down there. So there's a kind of ideal, oh, this is perfect. You know, I haven't slept for 8 hours. I can meditate. You know, the reality is I want to sleep, but I couldn't sleep. So I had to accept, well, you're not sleeping now. Why don't you just try lying meditation? So like establishing that, okay, this was a time of meditation, but I'm going to stay in this posture. And then establishing a formal posture that I found helpful and continue to do. And so I just tried to figure out, okay, so what would be a good way to do lying meditation? And in the classic Buddhist iconography, you get the Buddha in the Parinibbana posture, lying on the side and meditating like that. But I tried that and my arm fell asleep, so that didn't work. So I just found Shavasana, is that it? The corpse posture, yeah. I just found that posture to be very good, and I found that my hands on my thighs was very good for me, and I found a bolster under my knees was very good, because I've got some kind of knee problems and just having the knee slightly bent and a proper pillow and so on. So kind of figured out the technology of that posture for me, which would be good. And then having figured that out, then I could see that the one of the most important things was to set my mind. Now you're going to just notice the way things are, to set up that sense of awakened consciousness. And this is the way it is now, to make that. And then to use the body, I found that using the body was an obvious kind of meditation object. And then, very important, to not move. That, I think, was the most important thing I found. Not to move the posture. To use the first inclination to discomfort, very first inkling of it, and use that as a way of deepening my mindfulness of the body. And that I found was the key, because my association with discomfort and lying down, if I wanted to go to sleep, was then to readjust the posture into some kind of posture for sleeping. So the mindset was discomfort, get more comfortable, a little bit more comfortable, bye-bye. You know, that was the sort of succession of thoughts. Whereas if I took the feeling of discomfort, the first feeling, oh, discomfort's this way, it feels this way, it actually took me more into the body, but not in a kind of tight way. It's actually relaxed my body. And so I found, and I continue to find, that little piece of lying meditation, if I stay with that, then sometimes my body will be kind of like really, really quite restless, just like almost like some jerking or things like that. And if I just stay with that, then the body all of a sudden kind of gradually just really relaxes deep into the mattress or wherever I'm lying. And then it can be very, very fruitful meditation, very, very clear, but also very relaxed, very relaxed. So that's what I've been suggesting a lot to people on a few retreats I've been doing now, to consider that if you just don't want to meditate because your back is sore, your knees are sore, or something like that, do try to develop that. Obviously, the difficulty is just falling asleep, but that's okay. Maybe you need to sleep. So that's all right. So sometimes, actually, you have a lot of energy and you've got, like if you're sick or if you have some kind of insomnia, or like here, you know, you're in a different environment, you haven't got your own bed and your own situation, maybe you're a light sleeper or person next to you, unfortunately, is a loud breather. And you're just there, you know. So you could be there and say, "This is what it feels like to want to fall asleep," or you could say, "Oh, snoring is this way." And then you look at the kind of not wanting, and you say, "Oh, this is what it feels like not to want this person to be alive." Stop breathing, right? I have to get there at 5:30. Don't worry, I'm not taking attendance. So kind of give yourself permission not to fall asleep. You know, just like, because we quite often, you know, worry, you know, I have to perform tomorrow because sleep is important. For sure, it is important. No denying it. But like for the retreat, if like, okay, so you miss a few sittings, you have to sleep in the afternoon. Kind of give yourself that permission if you can't fall asleep, so that you can use that time maybe to try to develop lying meditation, so that you really like look at like this, like aversion to not falling asleep. Because, you know, annihilating the mind is one of the most beautiful things we have on this planet. You know, just to really have a deep sleep is such a great, great thing to be able to do. And then maybe we worry or whatever if we don't have that opportunity. And again, I mean, it's very important. Sleep is very important. But if it's not happening, maybe you just change the mindset a bit to one of worry or annoyance or concern or just fidgeting all the time and, you know, shifting the posture. Certainly, if you want, get up and do sitting practice. That's good, too. But kind of maybe take it as an opportunity and then also during this retreat when we do the walking meditation, if you want to try lying meditation, give it a go if you want. That's okay. Give it a go. See what happens. If you fall asleep, it's all right. No problem. You know, so that you kind of bring that into your repertoire as a serious posture, not just as a kind of like, oh yeah, he does lying meditation. Sure, right, just sleeping. We don't do it in the shrine room because it's just inappropriate in our tradition to do lying meditation. But give that some thought. But I think that for me, the piece is the not moving. And this is also true of sitting practice, that if you can, once you establish your posture, and then even, you know, like maybe you establish it and then you reestablish it. Kind of get it really as comfortable as possible. And then try to be very still, very, very, very still with the posture. Now, there's a difference between stillness and rigidity. That's not the idea. But just to notice the discomforts that we get and the restlessness in the body, just to use that factor as a way of deepening awareness. We're not trying to get rid of fidgetiness, but we're trying to each mind moment as a way of deepening awareness. And that can be very, very helpful. And then when you start to feel discomfort or some kind of aching pain or whatever, certainly feel free to move, but try to just notice discomfort as a condition. Let it become conscious. What's discomfort like? And quite often you find that it's okay. You know, most of us who have done meditation, it's just part of having a body. It's just that way. As opposed to if you have a bad hip problem or a knee problem, you know, you just got to get out of it or you're going to hurt yourself. So there's a kind of balance I think we're finding in the awakened mind, is a balance between kindness and diligence. You don't want to be so kind just to be restless all the time. You want to be diligent, but you don't want to be so diligent that you then hate meditation. You know, it just becomes this sort of battle with Mara or something like that. Kindness and diligence. So if we go to that model of riding the bicycle, for me I find that is a simple little model. Like finding balance, that for me is helpful. So what do you mean by balance? So this is the way it is now. Mind silent. The sound. This is the way it is now. It gets balance. And if I get that, then for the meditation, how can I sustain balance rather than get something? Got the balance already. I don't have to get anything. It's there. Just balance. Listening, presence, conscious presence. The unchanging as opposed to the changing. So what then from that, so that's riding the bicycle, where is the imbalance? What happened? Sleepiness. Ah, okay. I need to somehow understand sleepiness to get back on the bicycle. I'm now in the gutter. I'm down for the count. So then you make effort, certainly. Right? You make effort. But the effort is to remember or rebalance or come back to non-sleepiness. Anticipation, that's a kind of common one in meditation. If you've had meditation experiences, or you've read about something, or just the way we make effort. You know, when we make effort, we want to get some kind of a result. That's we're so conditioned by that, and that's natural. We do A in order to get B. You know, you boil the water in order to have edible rice, or you clean the snow so you can walk along the path. So there's a kind of trying to get somewhere with this effort that we make, and that's natural. But now what we're doing is returning to something, returning to presence. Huh? So one of the things that comes up in making effort is anticipation. There can be so much anticipation in trying to find something, or trying to get somewhere, again, through memory, through what you've read, someone has said something about a state of mind that would be very desirable, through some judgment of what's already going on. So anticipation is on the rim of the wheel. Anticipation is an object of consciousness. But if I'm not aware of that, I become that. I get reborn into anticipation. And then in meditation, it's like sometimes people are trying to find something with their eyes. So they're looking for something. So one of the things I like to recommend to people is include your eyes in your meditation. It sounds weird, but like quite often, you know, you're meditating on the breath and you're sort of reaching forward, trying to see something, literally see something. And if you think about our culture, how much time we spend in front of two-dimensional screens now, these flat screens, what they call computers or something, right? And I spend a lot of time in front of those darn things. So the eyes and the mind seem to me are in condition to get something, to figure something out, to solve a problem, to research something. So the mind is maybe conditioned that way. But now we're developing something I think is more receptive, allowing. That's why I like this language of make something conscious. So when I say, like, notice your hands, say, let them become conscious. It's not like a me doing something, it's allowing something to become conscious. So anticipation then arises in the body, in the posture, as tension. It can be in the eyes. But it's very much an attitude of trying to get something. And that can be quite subtle. You know, it's not so apparent. But if I don't notice it, then in my mind is always kind of leaning forward, never kind of leaning back into its heels. Leaning back. So then you intuit that, you need to notice that. So you do the refresh button or whatever. This is the way it is now. Anticipation feels this way. Now when I notice anticipation as an object of consciousness, then the mind becomes bigger. And even that is in awareness. And then that's known, and then you're in non-anticipation. Because the knowing of anticipation is non-anticipation. Huh? I mean, to see that, oh, that's just an object of consciousness. It's pointing back to awareness, but that's a bit more difficult to see or notice or understand. But as that begins to be known, you say, oh, that's why I'm off balance. That's why the bicycle ride's so unpleasant or tense or whatever. Aversion is a common aversion to bodily pain, aversion to thought, memories of aversion or whatever, self-judgment, these kinds of things. That's a type of mindset that kind of throws us off balance. So you can see if I'm just trying to get rid of thinking, say, I'm just trying to get rid of an emotion, and I don't notice that that's what I become, this being trying to get rid of something. And then I say, well, what's it really like now? Ah, there's aversion to thought. Ah, and then this is non-aversion. The knowing of aversion is non-aversion. So we're not just kind of, in the text you find the non-language a lot. You find non-aversion. When I first came across that, I just assumed it's opposite. If I have hatred, put love in. Kind of substitution kind of practices, and certainly you find those. But then I thought, well, maybe it's more subtle than that, and it is, because in the knowing of aversion, as aversion, you begin to abide as that conscious presence, aversion ceases. Not because you replaced it, because it's got no more fuel. You're not energizing it anymore, not believing it. You know it as just something on the rim, and you're coming back to the hub. And all these different ways where we lose balance, usually we call them the hindrances to meditation. And these are the things each of us has to somehow figure out, how to not fall off the bicycle. They're very particular to each of us. But I think that finding, understanding what balance is the key. You understand that, then you can work with whatever's going on. Get that right, then you can start to work with whatever's going on. So what I found with people who meditate, some people really like a sharp object of focus. They like to take the breath, they like to really narrow everything down and hone in on that. Some people can't do that. They just can't, their minds can't do that. They don't like doing that kind of breath work. They like contemplations of space. So there is a kind of, we all have sort of ways that our minds work where one suggestion for one person does not work for another person. So you have to kind of trust yourself to kind of experiment and see what works. But what is the basis of your experimentation? What is it? Is it to get something that someone told you have to get? To get rid of something that you think, you know, shouldn't be there? My suggestion, you know, everyone's giving you suggestions, but my suggestion is just the awakened mind, full conscious presence. And how can I sustain that, to trust that? Because it's always really available, it's always there.